Well, good morning. I'd like to start by being helpful to you today. There are many Sky Television customers here in the Midlands who may not be getting any signal at the moment. And if you are one of them, don't bother going outside and messing around with the dish because you've been disconnected. And no, it's not because your contract expired or you didn't pay your bill on time. The reason is you're dead. See? I knew you didn't know that. Full of useful information I am today. Sky TV is apologising profusely to 2,000 customers who are dead, apparently. Or at least they received letters of condolence and a request from Sky TV for outstanding bills to be paid. The mistake is being blamed on a systems error and all the usual guff. So if you have received one of those letters, don't go out and dig a hole. You are very, very much alive. Either that or this is one of those eerie Bruce Willis Sixth Sense moments. Coming up today, what can a 4G mobile phone do for you?
You don't like the straight answer if it's not the one you want. Here's the situation.
No. If I may.
Oh, no, to be fair.
You are prepared.
I've come on here. You're not giving me a chance.
I've given you ample chance.
I've come on here, Will, to put you viable alternatives, viable options, and to make real hard choices. Not for to buy into or embrace Sinn Féin.
No, what we have established is that you are insisting that Fine Gael would attack a part of their constituency which they are resisting, i.e. the high earners.
No.
But you will not under any circumstances entertain renegotiating the Croke Park Agreement for a substantial number of your constituency.
That's not what I said. You see, the reality is, do you know who's covered in the Croke Park Agreement? Ordinary hospital porters, as well as hospital consultants. I'm saying you address the high earners. And I don't necessarily believe, for instance, I know many, many people who earn high incomes who aren't necessarily Fine Gael supporters, who have a social conscience and who would like to make a contribution to solving this problem.
Okay, but who is more vulnerable? The hospital worker, be it the hospital porter, or the person receiving respite care grant?
So what do you want us to do? Cut people who are on low incomes?
Well, sure, cutting people who are receiving €1,700 a year. You're taking 325 quid off them, for God's sake. Are you telling me that that is more conscionable than taking a pay cut if you're a nurse or if you're a doctor or if you're a teacher or if you're a Garda? Come on.
Those people who are working their day have already taken serious, serious cuts. I'm saying there would be no need to cut the child or the respite care grant if we simply tax people who are on over 100,000. I've given you the solution. I've given you the option. And that's the option Labour should pursue vigorously with their Fine Gael partners in government.
And what if they don't? What if Fine Gael continues to drag its heels? You've established what your most desirable option is. I'm sure you will get a large gallery of people who will applaud a tax increase for high earners. What if Fine Gael resists that and doesn't accede to the Labour request? You said you were considering other options earlier. What are they?
No, listen, you see, I'm not attacking anyone. I'm not attacking anyone in high income. People are entitled to their earning when they're working. What I'm simply saying is that if we have to make hard choices, it would be better to tax people by somewhat more on those who earn over 100,000 instead of cutting low incomes and child benefit and respite care grants.
Fine, but that choice hasn't been taken. It hasn't been taken yet. So if it's not taken, do you take it? Do you accept it?
I'm very disappointed in the manner in which I believe the Labour negotiators blinked on this and were rolled over. I think they've got to go back to the table with the support of the moral authority that rests with them, the political responsibility, and the support of the parliamentary party and the public at large, and say this has to be revisited. So there's one other thing I'd like to say, Will, to be fair.
Just so I can clarify, so those negotiators go into that room knowing what the stakes are. What is your position if they fail to succeed in securing that tax increase for high earners so that these cuts can be reversed?
Okay. This is back to your old chestnut again. You're back around to wanting me to resign.
To wondering, do you have a backbone, quite frankly?
Oh, really? Well, You can put that to the test any time you like, Will. Anyone who knows me, I think, will make a judgment call on that. I'm not going to be goaded or provoked by you into saying something that I don't wish to say. I'm not going to have you put words in my mouth. But the fact of the matter is, I earnestly believe, after consideration to date, that there's nothing to be achieved for the people who I represent by me walking away and throwing a tantrum.
Right, so Fine Gael can run roughshod and introduce whatever policies they like, and you will support it quite blindly.
No, that's not true. So where do you draw a line?
Are you going to be fair?
Now let me answer.
Yeah, I've just asked you, where do you draw the line?
I'm going to show you where I draw the line. The reality is this, that I won't be rode roughshod over by anyone, because there are other elements. There are other elements in this budget that are very good things. For instance, as you well know, I campaigned vigorously for the restoration of funds for home helps and the restoring of the home helps levels and the home help hours.
Fine. My question was, where do you draw the line?
No, to be fair, you see, the thing is that...
You just don't want to answer the question, do you?
Hold on.
You say you won't be goaded into a position. You say, let me answer. And then when I do let you answer, you waffle about something else. You go off on a tangent. You
That's
meander more than the River Shannon, for God's sakes.
If you had a miscarriage, how would you feel if you were placed in a ward alongside new mothers and their bouncing babies? You're there. You've no baby. No calls for celebration. Just devastation. And all around you, there are smiling faces and life for everybody else is good. The master of the country's largest maternity hospital is admitting that women who have lost a baby are often mixed with new mums because of overcrowding. Dr. Rona Mahoney acknowledges this can be very traumatic, but she insists space is tight and there's often no other option. One lady who contacted us in response to this says she lost her baby in 1973. She was left in a ward with other mums who were nursing their newborns, and to this day, the memory is still with her. It's very vivid, it's clear, and it's unfair for anybody who has lost a child to be surrounded by newborns. Sinead Dooley is on the telephone from Tullamore. Sinead, good morning.
Morning, Will. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Unfortunately, you went through this not once, but twice.
I did, and I suppose, can I just say, Will, that when I was sending in the text, I stood over it for 10 minutes in the kitchen, and I wasn't going to send it because it's a subject that's very personal and very sensitive. And then I thought for a minute, I thought that as a local, I suppose a local councillor and public representative, that I find a lot of women on my doorstep looking for assistance, that if I can't speak out, there's no hope for other women. So, it's been the toughest call I've ever made, and even when I was waiting for it to come on, I went about hanging up a couple of times, because this is actually just the sensitivity of it. But I figure a lot of women...
thank you for making the call, by the way, and thank you for having the strength to talk about this. And you're not alone, by the way, and I'm going to make an admission as well. Alex had a miscarriage last year, and it's something we went through, and it's something that I can't appreciate it, obviously, from the woman's point of view. But one thing I discovered is that a lot of people go through it and very few talk about it. So
absolutely.
So thanks for
making the call. It's only when you open up and talk to other people that other women then say, that happened to me with my first or my second child. But to get to the point of it, I suppose I was delighted when I heard the report this morning, because that is one of the most vivid memories that I have. In particular, I suppose, the first miscarriage. We got married because I had a partner to get married to. So mm-hmm. We got married in June 95. And, of course, the first thing I wanted to do was start a family. I'd always wanted a baby in my early 20s. So
right.
I was expecting. And on Christmas Eve, I met with a group of friends in Forban, and I told them all the good news and told my family. I was 12 and a half weeks gone, so I figured I could tell all the family. But mm-hmm. Unfortunately, on Christmas morning, I miscarried.
Oh, no.
So it was kind of a double whammy, you know?
Oh, but, Lord. There's never a good time for it to happen.
Yeah, 10 o'clock Christmas morning will always stand out in my memory, because other days, I suppose, it might happen, a date might stick with you, you might forget it over the years, but at 10 o'clock Christmas morning, I always just... I count my blessings for the three healthy children that I now have, and just remember the two that we don't. But
what effect did it have on you, though? Because, as I said, I look at Alex now, and there's a fear, and there's a worry and a concern about what will happen in future, because the first time didn't go well.
No, and the easiest thing in the world for me to do is to say everything will be okay, but nobody knows that, and that is the toughest part when you miscarry your first baby. And in our instance then, I miscarried again the following July. Of course, I didn't take doctor's advice. I was told to take my time and not get pregnant again too soon, but sure, human nature being human nature, I wanted a baby. So within 3 months, I found myself expecting again and delighted, but miscarried for the second time in July. And it was really then, you know, the first time everybody says, oh, it'll happen once, you'll be fine. But when it happens a second time and the doctors look and say, look, we've no medical evidence, this happens to a lot of people, but we can't honestly tell you that you'll ever bring a baby to full term. So in Alex's position, or anybody, any woman who finds themselves in that position, it is tough because in the back of your mind, you're wondering, will I be okay? Is it a one-off? Is it a two-off? Will I be okay?
And having been through it twice, how long did it take before you had the strength to go for a third time?
Oh, sure, look, at blindness, of course, but I wouldn't have held back at all. I just wanted a baby and that was it. But I suppose it was 12 months again. And then I suppose at 5 months pregnant with Jack, I almost lost him again. And I was put to bed, for the want of it. I don't know the medical terminology, but I was told to stay in bed for the last 3 months of the pregnancy, which I did. And thankfully, I actually went 2 weeks overdue with him.
And all is well ever since, and he's fine,
oh,
and he's healthy.
Great, and two healthy girls after that. So it was just one of those, it's just one of those things. The consultants can't explain it, doctors can't explain it. Old wives' tale will kind of say, maybe the baby wasn't healthy, maybe it was better for the baby, but that's no consolation to any woman at the time who is planning for, looking forward to, and has told everybody their good news. It's heart-wrenching, but women being women, I can't speak for all women, of course, but any of the women and family members that it's happened to, women being women, we tend to just bury the feelings very deeply. And we get up and we get on with life and we say we're fine and we're grand. But it's until something like today's report comes out, I think it opens an awful lot of wounds for women.
And did it resonate with you, that description of being in the hospital surrounded by new mums?
It just came back to me, Will, as if it was this week. It just literally flooded back to me. I could even see, and I don't want to dramatise it because that's not what I'm here for and that's not what I'm like, and you know me a long time, it's not, but just, I suppose for other women that were listening to it as well, if I can explain, it was so vivid, and you read out a comment from a woman in 1973, it was probably equally as vivid for her this morning as it was for me in the 90s. When they described this morning about the newborn babies being brought into their mothers, that was the one vivid memory that stuck out with me. The first time I was in a private room, I was in a public ward because there was no private room.
Mm-hmm.
And the morning after I had you have a DNC after your miscarriage, and the morning after it at 6 o'clock, that was the one thing I could hear were the old steel cots are on wheels.
Ugh.
And all you could hear was the wheels of the cot being brought down the corridor one after another, and all the babies being brought into their mother. And
rips the heart right out of you, doesn't it?
It does. And one of the nurses just discreetly pulled the curtain around the bed. You know, but I mean the sound will stay with you forever.
Well, I remember with Alex we went over to the A&E in Portlaoise initially. And God love the woman on reception. She was a lovely lady. But she said, oh, you're Will Faulkner. You're the man off the radio. And went on and on and on. And Alex is standing there fuming, saying, I want some attention here. And then we went through into a waiting room and there were a couple of people there. And there was a lady who was coming in to give birth. And she had the belly and her husband was there. And it was their first child. And they were extremely excited. And we knew what was going on with Alex. And what could you do? Only smile and be happy for them. But on the inside, you're crumbling. And you see, you have to wear another hat here as a public representative. If you were looking at resources in hospitals, you know just how tight it is. Is it possible to have a separation between those who unfortunately are miscarrying and those who are going through the joy of giving birth?
Absolutely. And look, you have to be realistic. And that's why I said I've never, ever spoken on an issue like this. I mean, the easiest thing in the world is to jump up and down and give out about not having separate wards and separate units and all the rest. But the reality is very different. I think, look, you'd have the other argument as well then, that if I was brought in, or Alex or any other woman was brought in and we're brought off into isolation, we'd be saying we're nearly like a little dirty secret. They don't want to deal with us. We're brought off to a separate wing and we're treated differently than everybody else. It's a horrible balancing act.
My name is Jim Carton. I am 68 years old. I live in Mullingar with my wife, May. I have one son, two daughters, and seven grandchildren.
Jim Carton lives in Mullingar with his wife, May. What started out as a difficulty in moving his hand has advanced into motor neuron disease. Jim doesn't need the artificial voice to communicate, at least not yet. But as he sits engrossed in an episode of Judge Judy in his warm sitting room in the company of Pippin the dog, it is clear that technology makes an agonizing situation a little more bearable.
Will we go for a drive to Kilbeggan?
And you have pictures of the house and of all of these different places.
Yeah, and this is James's house, so if he wants to go to...
Let's go to James's. Let's go to Irene's.
And then if he wants to go home...
Let's go home.
So everything is on that he'd want, right down to medicine.
I have a sore tummy.
A leg. And
I have a sore leg. I have a headache.
You know, it's very, very good. Caroline, our daughter, would have set up a lot of this for us and has the pictures that are easy to recognise, so Jim would have no searching emotions here.
I am thirsty.
So it's a face with a glass, a chap yawning, and you just press it.
I am tired. I am happy.
He was put on the medication for Parkinson's and he didn't improve at all. And then this doctor said he'd like to get a second opinion and sent him to Orla Hardiman in Beaumont. And the first appointment we had with Orla Hardiman was cancelled because of the volcanic ash. She was stranded in Canada. And the second appointment we got 2 months later, Orla Hardiman couldn't be there, and we didn't know that till we got to Dublin. And the third time we got the appointment, another 2 months later, so we were waiting from March to September. And when Orla Hardiman met him on that day in Beaumont, she took one look at him as he walked across the floor and she says, "This is not Parkinson's, this is motor neuron."
Suspecting you have a terminal illness is one thing, but how does it feel to have it confirmed by a leading specialist like Orla Hardiman?
I didn't take it in as such, but she brought all the family up to tell us all what was going on. And she never told us how long I was expected to live. And I myself asked her, how long do you think I live? And I don't think she was too pleased with that. But she says a year to a year and a half.
And here you are still.
I'm still here, yeah. Do you love me? Really love me? Yes, I love you. It's the answer to everything. Yeah, you do.
Joe Dolan, in a way, was instrumental in the two of you getting together, you and Jim.
That's right, yeah. My father had a garage in Kilbeggan, and Jim came into the garage to buy petrol, and he said, "Was I going to the Roseland in Moat?" Which is going back a bit now. The next night, and I said, "No, I had no lift," and he said, "I'll bring you," and that was it.
Do you ever think back on those days, Jim?
Oh, I do. It was the best thing that ever happened to me.
Still an old romantic, then.
Never was.
I suppose the elephant in the room is the future. Do
you think about the future much?
No, we don't. We take it day by day. That's all you can do.
How do you feel when you think of what's to come, Jim?
I say I can do nothing about it. Whatever will be, will be.
I love you.
How often does he press that last one?
Not much lately. There's so much to be done here.
I love you.
I think the world of him.